He's right in front of me, and I can honestly tell him that I'm going to knock him spark out. Leaping right hand by the Prince. Ooh. And a hard left. And Kelly's down for the third time.
Whoa! He's for real. The
unbelievable.
For real.
One more touch to go. And Carnival's gone. Bernard Dunne is the champion of the world. Bernard Dunne is the champion of the world. Fantastic, Bernard. Fantastic.
And here comes
hello and welcome to Off The Brawl on Off The Ball for your weekly roundup from around the world of boxing. I'm Ronan Mullen, back in studio after a week in Wayne Moylett's neck of the woods is Phil Egan. What's the crack?
How you doing?
Looking refreshed?
Oh yeah. Best out west.
Also in studio is world champion, Olympian, author, Andy Lee. Did I miss anything out there?
Tired dad.
Coming up on today's show, we bring you an interview with lightweight champion of the world, Kelly Harrington, as she gears up for the road to Tokyo. We'll also assess Saturday's fare in London as Chris Eubank Jr. finally delivered on his promises to all but end James DeGale's memorable career. But before all that, it's to events at the National Stadium as the cream of Irish amateur boxing served up another night to remember. Lots of memorable fights at this year's Elite Finals, and none more so than the men's welterweight clash between Kieran Malloy and Paddy Donovan.
And the winner of that contest, and Lippy Crane Hire, National Elite Champion at 69 kilos for 2019 by unanimous decision. Malloy in the red corner. Show your appreciation for Patrick Donovan. Well done, boys. Well done.
Another championship for the ever-impressive Kieran Malloy there, the Galway man securing his second successive National League title. Lots of contention around it though, Andy. What do you think?
I watched it again since. I know on the night I'm doing the coverage for TG Carr, I pipped Malloy, and I probably still feel that way having watched it again. I thought Malloy just landed the more eye-catching shots, the snappier shots. And he made Malloy miss a lot.
And so you think Donovan won, sorry?
I thought Donovan won, yeah. it was a close fight. It's not a blatant robbery. You know, it's not like a blatant robbery. You could make a case for both men. But to me, Donovan won. How did you see it?
Yeah, I watched it, obviously. I was interested to see, because I watched it on TV, and you guys were there. So I was wondering, was it a case that Malloy got the decision because maybe better work rate, and I kind of felt Donovan landed the better shots. You know, his style, the way he fights, he waits for Malloy to come in and he picks him off. And I just wonder, did Malloy get the decision because maybe he landed more, he probably threw more punches, you know? But I was so impressed with Donovan. Mm. I think the beauty of when you're watching the amateur fights now as well, that they're not wearing the headgear. I don't know what your thoughts are on headgear, but because people are tuning in, these lads have recognisable faces and these girls have recognisable faces, because that's very important for their profile. Where it's like when I watch hurling and they're all wearing helmets and I've been reporting on games and a lad walks by, you're like, who is he? But you realise, because you don't recognise them without the helmet on. So, you know, people who would have tuned in, they're going to remember these two lads for the fight they put on.
It's a very good point, and there was one upshot from the lack of headgear. I think Paddy's got 30 stitches from that cut at the end of the...
Yeah, that is the downside.
So, these things do happen. It's the nature of the sport.
What was your thoughts on
me,
the fight?
Now, I have to say, I was sitting ringside, and I thought Malloy won it clearly. Sure. I thought each round was really competitive. It's one of those fights where the scorecard might look askew, but each round was really hard fought, top level, but I thought Malloy edged, you know, for the most part. And while I love Donovan, I'm the biggest fanboy going, but there was a lot of flashy stuff, and Malloy was all killer, no filler. It was whatever he threw was meaningful, he landed it. And the new amateur boxing judging rules, there was a lot of this for people who are on the podcast, like Donovan just shaking his hand, but he didn't actually land anything. Whereas Malloy was countering back with big shots down the middle off both hands. And it was weird because a lot of us at ringside thought Molloy was a clear winner. And then Joe from IrishBoxing.com came over to me and said, well, all the lads on TG Carr are saying Donovan won. So we weren't sure. Like, I did watch it back and it was a pick'em. Like, it could have gone either way, but
I think Molloy landed a solid jab throughout the fight. That was probably obviously his tactic with the right hand against the southpaw to jab with him. And he might have landed across the whole fight maybe two good, clean left hands. And when they were jabbing, to me, Donovan was counteracting the jab with his lead hook. And like when they were I don't know. To me,
it's a game of opinions, Andy.
It's a game of opinions. Now, it was a close fight, but I don't know.
What about the old school judging, where they count like points for punches?
Well, at least there's accountability there. Do you know?
It's a great area. Like
Molloy probably would have won on that as well.
I don't know.
It's a weird one.
I don't know.
Because I thought Simon, while he's not here, he had it to Donovan. Mm. But I don't know. Clearly, I thought when the decision was announced, I thought, you know, rightly so. There was a huge contingent there from Molloy as well. I don't know if that's weird things.
There was a synchronized, kind of coordinated
cheer every time he even threw a punch, and that was obvious. They were obviously told to do that. That's a tactic, you know. Like when you go out like in these countries and you're internationally boxing, and like all of the team of any country, and when their fighters fighting, they'll go hey, you know. Anytime it looks like, and it does actually affect it. It catches the judges, a little bit. I don't know. To me, I love
Donovan, and I think he's going to be sensational. But I just thought Molloy won the other night, and
yeah, that's fine. Like that's fine, but there'll probably be pressure on Molloy now to try and wrap up qualification this year.
The pressure's on.
World Championships, he'll have to like.
Because in 12 months' time, if they box again,
he's only 20 years old himself, Molloy, so it's still early.
You could tell in the post fight, he was really annoyed with the build up to this fight, because all the talk was about Paddy Donovan. We were guilty of it last week, and as Andy said, he's only a year older himself. He's the prodigious talent. He's won international medals as a senior, and he said this fight showed the difference between an elite fighter and a senior fighter. Like you could see, he was passionate about it, and this is a brilliant rivalry if both of them stay amateur, which isn't guaranteed. But I don't know.
If Donovan was to turn pro, you'd be hugely excited about it. His prospects, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
Molloy too.
Yeah.
But I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Just the style
of Donovan. About him, isn't he?
Yeah, watching him, you kind of thought, with the
highlights and the hair and the tan and, you know, and with the little showboating.
He has the image.
There's something about him.
You know, he's going to look good on the posters trying to sell fights.
His footwork was great, you know, and his shots, I thought his shots, both of the guys handled the occasion very well. That was a huge pressure fight for him. That'll stand them both in good stead, you know.
Donovan's a promoter's dream, obviously, for those reasons, but there is a bit of chatter about Molloy turning pro as well. Do you think his style is suited to?
Yeah, I think both of them would make good pros. Molloy they're similar in ways, but so different, you know. Like, Molloy kind of is more obviously physically robust and kind of has that kind of muscle power. I don't know, you know, where Donovan will hit you quick and hit you fast, might knock you out with a punch that you won't see, whereas Molloy will hit you with something hard and probably make you concussed. They're both good prospects. For my next impression, there have been several people in touch with me about Donovan already.
Really?
So he's like, he's on the radar. You know, both of those guys would be on the radar. I'm not sure. You hear rumors about Molloy that he might already have an agreement in place to turn pro. That's unconfirmed. I don't know anything about that, but that's what I heard. And then Donovan will be one to be trying to sign. There'll be a lot of demand, I think.
So 10 years time, they'll be fighting.
Yeah,
in
all
Ireland.
Yeah,
world title fight, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, we'll just say we'll get to the full card now, because in all 17 champions were crowned in the ring at the National Stadium. 10 in all world titles as well. We'll start with the men's side first. At 49 kgs, Regan Butley beat Sean Murray. Then we had one of the fights of the night, and probably the best atmosphere, I thought, throughout, was served up by Adam Hessian of Monavay as he beat Evan Metcalf. Really top-end action from both, fought at ferocious pace. Hessian, only 18 years old, but he showed some serious man strength to get through Metcalf, who was hammering away. Hessian overcame a point deduction for a low blow to take that one on the cards. At 57kg, one of the real pickems of the night, could have gone either way. Paddy Adamus of Drimna ultimately got the nod over Limerick's Christian Sikiso. Fighting at 60kg, David Oliver Joyce beat Errigal's Dominic Bradley. That's a weighty name to be carrying around, but he boxed every ounce of it. Did his cousin proud, only 18, David, so skills to burn there. Having both moved up to 63kg to put themselves in the Olympic picture, it was quite a strange fight in the end between James McGivern and George Bates, both seemingly trying not to lose rather than really taking it by the scruff of the neck. McGivern won a close decision in that one. Molloy versus Donovan, we've already mentioned, but we'll mention it again. Hopefully we see more of those two for years and years to come. Same for Gabe Dawson at the middleweight limit. Absolutely ridiculous performance as well against 2017 champion Emmett Brennan of Glasnevin. Dropped him as well and won male boxer of the night, and don't think anyone could argue with that. And one of the quote-unquote upsets came at 81kg as Thomas O'Toole took the title over Tommy Hyde. Really shut Hyde down for the most part. The Cork man had success in the last round but never really had a chance to finish the job. That win made it 4 on the night for the lads from Galway. Absolutely brilliant stuff over there. And then, just to round it off, rather one-sided fights from the big boys in the end. Tony Brown and Dean Gardner scoring wide wins over Kenny Okungboa and Martin Keenan to pick up the heavy and super heavyweight gongs, respectively. Lots there, Andy. We'll get to the women's boxing in a second, but anyone else stand out for you in the men's side of things?
I like James McGivern. I thought he boxed a good controlled fight, knew he was winning, and didn't have to step out of his comfort zone or didn't have to step out of his game plan. You know, there was no panic. He kind of got an early lead and just maintained. What did you think of him?
Pretty good. Like, it was a cagey sort of affair. As you said, he didn't need to overextend himself, I thought. Hessian was brilliant, I thought, on the night.
I didn't see that fight. It was just before I got in. But Bernardone stopped me and said, "What do you think of Hessian?" And, like, so that would tell you enough, you know, that he's highly rated, yeah.
Only 18, he looks so young, and he looks even younger, arguably, but the atmosphere around him, he's a huge contingent as well, and the Galway showing on the night was noticeable, and they really, really stood up.
I felt a bit of sympathy for Emma Brennan, because I thought the first round he was boxing a very smart fight. He was kind of just stepping back from Dawson, not going to him, not, you know, being the aggressor against the counterpuncher, and he was just kind of sneaking and raiding in with that right hand, and it was landing, and you can make an argument he up to the knockdown he was winning the first round, and he was, I thought. And then when he got the knockdown, he's 2 points down and he has to kind of abandon his strategy and then go to the counterpuncher, and it just all fed into Dawson's hands. And but there was a smooth performance by Dawson in the end, once he kind of got established that counterattacking against Brennan. So it was like even though, like, kind of conspired against Brennan, the champion always kind of finds a way to win. Like, oh, the guy who you think or who you can see is who will be a winner will find a way to win, you know?
Yeah. How many fights did you watch, lads?
I saw all of them in the end. I only had the very first fight I missed because of all the ball traffic, but I got there for most of it. It is a long old it's a long old slog, but it's still.
What did you think of the Tony Brown decision? Obviously, I was very critical of the referee on the TV broadcast, but it was a bizarre ending, wasn't it?
The whole fight was weird.
It was a bizarre ending. Like, the right man won, I think, because he just landed the better quality punches, but there wasn't much in it. And then the referee, like, just for people who hadn't seen it, the referee had stopped the fight, stopped both guys, warned them, stopped us repeatedly for have the cuts like taken care of by the doctor, and then it's in the last few seconds of the fight he brings Tony Brown over to the corner and stops the fight, and now Tony thinks he's lost the fight. Tony thinks he's been stopped on a cut, and then they announce decision, referee stop contest in round 3. The winner is, and that means you've, like, the referee stopped the contest, so you've lost because of your cut. Tony Brown goes, now throw his hands to the air, like, I won't say, tried to repeat what he said. And then they announced him as the winner. It was bizarre.
Yeah, I thought he was...
Was it a mix-up or what? What happens in that case? Did they go to the scorecards?
Yeah, they went to the scorecards, but I thought he was ahead on the scorecards was stopped. So it was very much...
Why wouldn't they, like, make a technical decision I don't know.
There was confusion all around the arena. Mm. He thought he'd been denied the win because yeah. I thought he was clearly ahead and it looked like the referee had stopped
it.
How
bad was the cut?
Nothing major. Like
he carried the cut from the quarterfinals, semifinals, and it was the last few, you know, might have been 30 seconds of the fight.
Even the Malloy and Donovan fight.
I know, that
there was only a few seconds.
That was in some ways that was controversial to me because I was at a point when Donovan was really scoring and I know he was doing the hand, you know, the fist pumping and stuff. But it kind of really just stopped, and it was only 10 seconds left, but it kind of just stopped the momentum and it could have really punctuated the round for either of them, you know?
Mm. No, there was a few officiating, Farag was all right, but it was a mixed bag on the men's front. There was some competitive action, some standout performances. Dawson, given the injury he carried in the previous weeks, he did look light on his feet and another potential pro prospect. You know, he's got that sort of style that will appeal to promoters.
I think across the board, now I don't want to seem like an old fart who says, oh, back in my day, it was, you know, but across the board, you could say that the standard has dropped slightly, you know, that you'd always, like, in years previous, both guys, finalists and champion, eventual champion, would have been international standard boxers, you know, and would have had maybe several medals at international level. Nowadays, you can see a big gulf in the actual winners and the guys who are just finalists, you know, and there are guys probably in finals now and semi-finals now that would never have been there in previous years.
Why is that then?
Well, definitely the competition is weakened by the lack of, the absence of Joe Ward, you know, Kurt Walker, Brendan Irvine, and probably a couple of others that just would bring the whole standard up. You know, like, if those guys are in the competition, this list of winners here that we have in front of us is completely different. I don't know. There are a lot more boxers turning professional now, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure why that would be. Maybe it's a downside of the high performance that you have such focus on the best and that they progress so far. And I think maybe there should be a responsibility in trying to raise the standard of all the other guys, but it's very hard to do, isn't it?
We mentioned Ward last week, given that he's European level, that he's technically Irish level as well, but would Tommy O'Toole get a box off with him? Has he earned it?
I doubt it. I think Joe Ward is kind of put into a category by himself. And possibly those other two boxers that I mentioned, Irvine and Walker. And maybe they have some reassurances that, you know, if you don't win this championship, you're still going to be the number one. But you would feel bad for any champion who's come into the championships, won the title, fought three or four fights, and now you're not going to get the chance. You will get a chance to represent your country, but not to be the number one when you're going to be fighting in the Worlds or the Europeans.
Mm. And is it too early to earmark any World or Olympic prospects out of the bunch that did fight on Saturday? Would you say there's any?
The 69 kilo, either of those guys, you would fancy they'd be one of the favourites of the team going into it, Donovan O'Malley. Hessian I didn't see, but, you know, Bernard Dunne, he's only young, but Bernard Dunne had a lot to say about him. McGivern, I think he's got the perfect style for international boxing. I think he's one that we could look at. I don't know, like, Dean Gardner, over the course of this championship,
he's improved.
He was a shout for being best boxer. Mm-hmm. Just because he went through those guys, you know what I mean? Like, he really showed his class that why he's the number one guy. Like, Keenan's a tough man and was champion in the previous year, so,
yeah.
Like, isn't, and he beat Tommy Sheehan on the way and another guy on the way. And, like, for such a big man, his body work was exceptional, you know, the body punching and that. And he's improved.
He's
certainly
a lot.
Improved. Like, yeah. You, especially at that high weight where the standard can be a bit, you know, can be a hit and miss where you might get the odd guy who doesn't deserve to be there. He could be an outside shout for a medal. If he can get it right up here, I don't think anyone's ever questioned his physique or his technique. And it just seems to be, maybe he's piecing the puzzles together now that he's a little bit older. He seems to be quite confident and, yeah, he could be one to tip for an outside medal.
Mm. Well, we'll turn our attention to the women's action now on what was a closely contested slate of action. Star attraction on the night, though, was, of course, Kelly Harrington. And delighted to say I caught up with the lightweight champ earlier on. Kelly, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
How's life?
All good, yeah, feeling good, feeling ready to rock and roll again.
Yeah, and fresh from your first fight back on Irish soil there on Saturday, looking fresh?
Yeah, it's nice to get a fight after since November, so it's nice to be back in there, back doing your thing, and hopefully keep it going now.
Yeah, and you're here as part of the Dare to Believe Olympic Primary Schools programme. a school activation program championed and supported by the Athletes Commission. Olympism, Paralympism and the benefits of sport will be promoted in schools nationwide by some of Ireland's best known and most accomplished athletes in a fun and interactive manner. The initial pilot phase is targeting the 5th and 6th class students in primary schools. People can check out Dare to Believe for more. In terms of your own association with this programme, Kelly, can you tell me a bit about that?
Well, for me, like, when I was younger in school, there was nothing really in the schools for us, you know, and there wasn't a great variety either in the schools. So I think something like this, where the schools have an option of all different sports, is absolutely fantastic, you know. And for boxing to be a part of that is brilliant. It's a great programme, it's been ran very well, and it's very refreshing. So I think it's a fantastic setup, and if I was 10 to 12, I'd love to be doing something like this.
Yeah, and I know you've always been advocating encouraging young people to get involved in, particularly youth people in the inner city. Is there something about sport particularly, though? I know they can go down different routes, like music or acting or those kind of things, but is there something about sport you think is beneficial in particular?
Yeah, like you said, they can go down all different routes. Like, we've loads of actors and stuff, like, in the inner city. But sport, for me, it brings a great discipline, you know. For me, that's why I chose sport instead of singing, you know. I left my singing career aside so the discipline in it is just, it's great, and like, I mean, every kid and needs discipline in their life, you know. And a focus as well, there's a focus in it as well, like. So I mean, when I first started, I had the focus on my first fight, which was 3 months after I started. So like, you're focusing on something all the time, there's always a focus. So like, as a kid, it's nice to have a focus, and that focus will bring discipline. So
And I mentioned you boxed on Saturday at the national finals, and you're one of the main attractions, albeit you had a walkover in the lightweight division this year, so it was an international contest. Was the motivation slightly different going into Saturday compared to last year, for example?
It was, yeah. There's no point denying it. Like, when you're getting ready for a national elite final, you expect to be fighting a national person, like an Irish person. You're always geared up for it, because there's always a real challenge. Like, you have to win it, you know. Like, you have to win it.
Yeah.
But it's different this time. I didn't have that. Like, I have to win this, you know. Like, not that I was going in thinking, like, oh, I don't have to win it either, you know, but that little bit of an extra push wasn't there for me, you know. But I was just delighted to get the fight either way, you know. I definitely, like, if I hadn't got the fight on Saturday, I would have been very, very disappointed. Like, this week I'd be snapping, basically, because that's where everyone wants to be at, on is in the finals of the elites. But as well as that, for my own preparation going forward, to get rid of the rust as well. I wanted to be back in there, in an environment where there's people sitting around the ring and judging, and like the atmosphere and the nerves and all. I wanted to feel that again. So when I'm going into my next competition, it's not just happening and I'm feeling it there. I'm like, oh, this is overwhelming. So do you know what I mean? It's all a part of the process. Like,
and it's a brilliant showcase, as you said, and you got a lovely reception back. I think you said after the fight someone asked you what the next move is, and you said you're going to have a pizza or a burger. Have you had time to unwind since the World Championships? Have you been able to switch off?
Yeah, I've been training hard. Like, I'm always training hard. I have to train hard for myself, for my own head anyways. But I've been eating like a horse, and my weight is fine, so it's grand. Like, but coming closer to competition, you obviously start to tidy up your diet a bit and start eating correct and eating the right things. That's going to give you energy for your fights, and it's what you eat during the week of a fight that's going to benefit you through your fight, you know. So that would be my goal in coming up to fights and stuff.
Yeah, and I know it's good to have an escape from boxing, even though it is your passion and what you're driving towards, but I know I've seen you speak before about St. Vincent's in Fairview, and you think that was an outlet, an escape from boxing. You're really passionate about that, aren't you?
I love it. Like, it's just amazing to go in there, and do you know what it is? It's like, I still don't see myself as anything special, because I'm still doing the same things all the time. Like, I haven't got superpowers or anything. Like, I'm just a normal person, and like sometimes people will be like, oh, the world champion, blah, blah, blah. It's great, you know, I love it. But I also love people being real and saying, yeah, you might be a world champion, but you still have to do this, you know, like you're still like, you know, you're no better than anyone else. Like, you know, we're all human, we're all equal. Like, I'm just lucky enough to have won the world championships.
Yeah. And what would your typical work day be like in St. Vincent's?
So I get up, be in there for half eight, and then they'll get their breakfast. So I bring up their breakfast and stuff and give out their breakfast and that. So that'd be between like 9 to 10. Clear away the breakfast and stuff, clean the tables off and what have you. I'll go for a run then on my break, get the run in, come back, have a shower, have something really quickly to eat, get back up and have a bit of crack on the water for a little while, and then it'll be dinner time between 12:30, 1:30. So they get the dinner then and clear that all away and give them a little while to settle down and let the food settle in their bellies before I get them going. So when they settle down, then I'll be like, come on, we go in and we get the karaoke on, like, because it breaks my day up as well, you know, like I could sit there all day and do nothing and be bored and like be saying, oh Jeannie, I can't wait to go home watching the clock, you know, like, but that's not the type of person I am. I'd rather be there and be active and have the crack with them, you know. So I'd be there and I'd be turning on the karaoke and we'd be up and we'd be singing and we'd be dancing and having the crack and all, like the stick does be going, like, it's a great place to work. But I think for me, because I'm not there all the time, that's probably why. Whereas if I was there working full time, I probably wouldn't get the same quality, if you know what I mean. Like, so I love it. So every time I go in, it feels like I'm just going in to visit them, you know. Like, they're like family to me, to be honest with you. There's 9 patients on the ward, St. Mary's ward, in the hospital that I work on, and they're all great, like, and they support me totally, like, and they'll tell me how it is, like, you know, like, so I love it, like, I love their honesty. So it's brilliant, like, you can't get any more realer than that.
And just to bring it back to the World Championships briefly, I know, like, you boxed really well throughout the tournament, got better as it went along, but when it came down to the split decision at the end, and I know you haven't always got the rub of the green on those, what was going through your mind just as the score was being read out at the end?
Just, to be honest with you, I was thinking, no way, not again, I don't believe it. Like, I thought, like, this can't be happening, like, what am I going to do? Like, a split decision, like, how am I going to cope with this? Like, and when I got it, like, I was just, like, I wasn't shocked that, like, oh, I'm shocked I've won, like, I can't, like, you know, I was shocked that, like, I've actually got the nod on a split decision. I'm like, oh my God, like, I'm actually, like, getting the nod here for once, like, but the feeling, like, was just, I can't describe it, like, it's amazing, it really is, like, when I was looking back at the clip, with the coaches and all, like, in the corner, like, Dima was jumped into Zor's arms, his legs and all were off the ground, like, and he's pulling him up, like, and, like, it's those moments that, you know, like, I don't know, world champion, I'm a world champion, yeah, all right, but it's everyone around me who has put so much time into me, who has made me a world champion in life, and not in boxing, like, you know, they've helped me shape my life as well, like, rather than just become a world champion, like, you know, there's so much more to it than just being a boxing world champion. Like, I feel like I'm winning at life every day, like, that I get to spend time with those people and, you know, work with those people, and it's brilliant. And I don't want it to ever end.
You mentioned the feeling there, and you've spoken about the balance between maybe the fear of losing and the joy of winning, maybe sometimes
it's greater, the fear of losing sometimes can be greater than the joy of winning, and that happens to a lot of athletes, and you'll see it in the athlete, like, they've had a clean, like, sweep for so long, and then they're terrified, like, to box, because they're so afraid of losing and how they're going to cope with, like, oh, if I lose, like, what are people going to think, and all that kind of stuff that goes on, like, but for me, like, I've lost before, like, I know what that feeling is like, you know, like, I'm not saying I'm never going to lose again, like, it's not a loss if you take nothing away from it, it's a loss, you know. Mm. Like, if you take something away from it, then you're not losing, like, you're learning all the time, like. So for me, it's a part of the process, and you just have to trust the process and believe in yourself, and not every day is going to be a good day at the office, really, you know.
And in terms of, like, we saw the other night on Saturday, the quality of female boxing in Ireland at the moment, but when you started off in your teens, was it tricky to get established as a female boxer in Ireland? Were many of the clubs amenable to bringing female boxers in, even?
When I first started, like, one club wouldn't take me because we were, like, I was in the youth club and I told them, listen, I want to start boxing. So they had got a club up to speak to us, but they didn't actually know they were coming up to speak to a group of girls. Mm. So when they came up, they were like, oh, and they were shocked. And I was like, we actually don't take girls, like. So that was knocked on the head. And eventually I got into a club in the area. They got their own showers and all, like. But I never actually took a shower at that stage because I was too young. I just ended up going across the road to my house, like. But it was quite hard to get a respect as a young female boxer. I won't say athlete because I wasn't an athlete back then. Do you know what I mean? There's no point in beating around the bush. I wasn't an athlete. I'm an athlete now, but I wasn't back then. And it's hard to become an athlete when you're not getting respect. Mm. You know, so I wasn't getting respect off a lot of people. Some people were giving me great respect, and then some people just thought, oh, girls shouldn't box and all, like. And you're like, who are you to say I can't box? Probably punch the head off you. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's crazy. Like, but the good thing is, it's really, really changed. Like, I couldn't tell you the last time I heard someone saying something like that. Or, like, the thing is now, people are, like, they actually want the girls in the club. They're actually trying to get the girls into the clubs now. Because the girls are producing a lot of medals, like, you know, like, it's, especially underage, like, the medals that's coming in is a lot of them are females, are girls, you know. And then of course all the grants and all for, like, if you have females in your club, you get special grants as well for female changing rooms and showers and all this kind of crack. So yeah, people are changing their minds when they're seeing we're bringing the results now.
Yeah, and I read before, I think, about your first experience in boxing. You were thrown in the deep end a bit in Cavan, I think it was. What was the story behind that?
Yeah, I was in Cavan, and before I was in Cavan, I was told, you're going to have a fight. And I was only in the club, I think, 3 months, like. And I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I was real nervous going down, like. But when I went down, like, she was pinging the head off me, literally pinging the head off me. And when I'd land shots on her, I'd say, sorry. Like, it was a real kind of, like, sorry, I hit you that hard. No, you don't hit me that hard, won't you not? Like, you know, I just hadn't got a clue what, like, I didn't know what I was getting into, do you know what I mean? Mm. But went to the third round, and it was nearly got through the third round, but they stopped it then in the third round. I hadn't even got a clue. I was like, what's going on? Like, I didn't even know it was stopped until after the fight, like. And I was told, yeah, you were stopped in the third round. And I was like, what? Like, and then they explained it to me. But I come home on the bus, and I literally bawled my eyes for the whole time coming home. And, like, just because the competitiveness, like, I just wanted to win, like, you know, I just wanted that feeling, like. And I was so upset that, like, I was embarrassed, like, that I had lost my first fight, like, that I had lost, like, you know. Mm. But then I came back and I fought the same girl. I kept training because I was like, I'm gonna get her, I don't care, I'm gonna get her, because she'd had a few fights, you know, like. It wasn't a fair fight by any means, like. So I come back, and I think I trained for a year, and I fought her then on our club show then, where, like, there was people from my area and all around, so they were all watching, and it was great because I beat her, like. And I, like, wouldn't say I beat her well, but, like, I beat her cleanly and fairly, you know, like, which was brilliant, like. So I was delighted with that then. Hmm.
And you went on to establish yourself as one of our top fighters, but there was a bit of a roadblock, obviously, with Katie Taylor at 60 kilos. Were you always confident that, did you ever lose faith, I suppose, during that period, or were you always confident you'd eventually get to the point you're at now?
Yeah, like, I mean, you're always going to lose faith when there's someone else there, like. And then plus, even as I got older, people still weren't taking me serious in boxing, like. and there was only eyes on one female boxer in Ireland. You know, like there was only one female boxer in Ireland, but there wasn't actually. There was a whole load of other female athletes coming through, like, and no one got a look in. So I was kind of like always sitting on the back burner, really, like, you know. But like I said, for me as a person, boxing shaped my life and it changed my life. I kept training because, not simply because I thought, like, I'm going to train one day, I'm going to become a world champion or anything, but because it was changing my life for the better. And because if I didn't keep boxing, what would I be doing? Like, you know, like, God knows what I'd be doing. So I kept training anyways, and I kept getting better. Like, all the time I was getting better. So eventually Katie is gone, and then I'm filling in there now. I'm the new world champion there now, like, so yeah, it's good. Everyone has their moment. She had hers, I have mine, and I'm sure there'll be someone now behind me that will have theirs, you know. But it's all about, you know, it's about encouraging other female athletes and not being the only one. I'm not the only one there. Like, there's a whole team around me, like, and there's a whole team of female athletes, and there's a younger generation coming up. And I'm telling you now, you watching a few years' time, these are really going to blow you out of water. I swear, like, I'm telling you, really, really good. Really good. And I'm always saying it, and I know a lot of them, like, and their positivity and their determination now, like, it's just, it's to be admired, like, because there's no way had I got that when I was that age, like, you know, like, they actually, it's kind of scary when you look at the determination and the goals that they have at that young age. Like, the only thing I would say is I hope that, like what I said, the fear of losing is greater than the joy of winning. Some of these people, and has happened over the years, some of these kids have been winning, and the coaches have been telling them they're brilliant, and then they take a loss, and then it's like the world has ended, and then boom, they're gone, you know. So for me, I'm trying to tell them, like, it's never a loss. Like, if you take something away from it, like, you're learning from it. Like, it doesn't define you as a boxer, you know.
And the clock's against us, but just one last point. I know we're like, Tokyo's firmly on the horizon now. We've got international tournaments this year, and everyone's going to be preparing for Kelly Harrington. You're the new pin-up. That's what all the other guards will be aiming to achieve or get to that level. Has your mindset changed now? I know you can't train any harder because you've always been one of our hardest trainers, but how does your focus switch?
It just, like what you said, like, someone told me there the other day that the Thai girl, like, they're all training to beat me now, like, and I'm like, I can't do that. I can't train just for one person, because you go out and you meet someone else and they beat you. You know what I mean? And all along you've been training for this one person. Like, it doesn't make sense. Like, and it has happened, and I've seen people do that kind of thing, training for one person who has beat them. Like, and it doesn't work out that way. Mindset has trained. It's just to I need to fight and I need to box. I need to do orthodox and I need to do a southpaw. I've been doing all of that. I've been working at it all. It has stood to me, so I just need to get better at doing it. So I need to keep doing what I'm doing and just get mentally stronger a bit as well, like, you know. But it's great. Like, I've a great community and a great area who keeps me mentally strong, and I'm delighted. And I'm a part of the Dublin City Council. I'm an ambassador for the North East in our city, and they're doing great things in there. And to be able to bring all of this back to my community, to see these kids, like, coming up to me as, like, looking at me as a role model, like, it's hard. I was only saying it this morning, I still can't believe that people are looking at me as a role model. Like, I'm like, what? You know, so it's fantastic. It's, this experience is great. It's not going to last forever, so I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying being a role model and ambassador for the Dare to Believe program and for the North East Inner City. It's just fantastic.
Great stuff. World champion Kelly Harrington, thanks a million for coming in.
Thanks a million for having me.
Cheers. All right, so lightweight champion of the world, Kelly Harrington there, fresh from Saturday's win over Yelena Jelic of Sweden. Probably not the big fight she was hoping for compared to last year's finals maybe, but nice to see her get a homecoming all the same. Phil, your old gym pal.
Yeah.
At 29, she's getting the acclaim she always deserved.
That's it, yeah. I remember when I asked her, yeah, and he got at the boxing, like, she's like, I'm okay. She's been very modest, since then. She's been in two world finals. She's obviously a world champion, so she's doing all right.
A long time in Katie Taylor's shadow, Andy, but she's finally stepped out on her own now. She's a big star.
Yeah, and getting a lot of media coverage, which is great and nice to see, and well deserved. And she boxed well within herself, but was totally in control on the night, and you could see the class, even compared to the other eventual champions on the night, that she stood out as, like, you know, you can see why she's world number one. Yeah, lovely performance and a nice little run out to keep it sharp.
Yeah, and she mentioned there that the psychology has shifted now, that she's the hunted rather than the hunter, because she was at a function there a couple of weeks ago and people were telling her from Thailand that she's the picture on the wall, that we have to box like Kelly Harrington, how are we going to beat Kelly Harrington? So already, and Tokyo's a long way away yet, that she has to adjust her game plan, because notoriously she'd be one of the hardest workers anyway in the gym. So it's not working harder, it's probably working smarter, is it?
Yeah, especially at 29 as well. Maybe that was something that, you know, at the amateur level where it's so ferocious and it's so quick, you know, the fights themselves, especially the 2-minute rounds that the female boxers do, it's they have to be, you know, in and out and on it. So I would say just be smart, yeah. She obviously has this pedigree and the skill, and now she's gotten over that hump and become world champion. Just to fine tune things now. You can see she has the class. Like she's like, such a shame that her and Katie had to be the same weight, and she had to move her out of the weight to fight at 64 kilos, which was not, because other than that, we could be talking about her in the same similar bracket, you know, similar kind of a bracket of achievements. But she's like, it's not, she's coming at a good time. I think she's kind of peaking at the right time. And she'll be, like, as I said on the broadcast on Saturday, she's obviously a favourite for a medal, but maybe possibly gold medal in Tokyo.
And she was saying that she was getting to a confidence level where if Katie had stayed on post-Rio, Kelly was ready to come back then and challenge her. So it just shows you where those two were at.
Yeah, and she's able to dedicate more time to boxing. Like, even, like, I know when she was working in the gym around the corner from where I was, like, she, you know, she was trying to juggle it all, but now she can dedicate to do what, like, obviously the harder you train, like, the better you're going to be. Like, the talent is always there, but sometimes other obstacles can get in the way, whether, you know, it's work commitments or, like, I know she's talked about working in the hospital as well. Mm. Like, she's, but, like, her focus now for the Olympics, like, that's going to be, it's all geared up towards that. Like, and
the problem for her now is the pressure and the expectation.
Yeah, that is.
Like, look at us here, we're sitting here talking about it, you know, and it's a different problem you have to solve. Like, the one problem, not having time or being, like, spread thin throughout your life and your lifestyle, now is when you don't have those, you've got this focus on you and
more
the pressure.
More time to think as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, I even think back to, obviously, 2012 and Katie Taylor, like, you know, people, like, were practically had the medal around her before it even started. And, like, I found those fights so uncomfortable to watch because you just wanted her to do it so much. And I just remember when I watched the final, I actually watched it on my own because a few times there was fights on in the office. I couldn't deal with the people around me screaming and, you know, if she ever got hit, because I was like, it's boxing, like, she throws a lot of punches, but she will get hit the odd time. Like, everyone needs to calm down. But I had to watch the final on my own because I was so nervous for, and then waiting for the decision. So I see, like, I know exactly, like, the pressure is going to be, it won't be quite the pressure it was on Katie Taylor.
It might be, though, because, no.
I'm sure she'll have it on herself.
We forget what it's like every 4 years, but until it's Olympic year and then people start getting interested and the demand on her will be huge. Because of all of her achievements, you know, like, she'll be one of the favourites, and the interviews and, you know, the press stuff, they'll have to be put a good team around her and keep her away from all that stuff. But we'll see, you know, we'll see. It's still got the world and Europeans to come, and she has to qualify, so we'll see.
And she mentioned there that as good as the current crop of Irish female boxers are, that the next generation are arguably even better. So just to talk about the girls that boxed on Saturday night, we'll run through just a quick summary of what went down. First fight of the night came at 48 kilos. That was between Chloe Fleck and Dana Barr, who actually boxed in January's Ulster final. Fleck forcing two counts on Barr in that one. On the TV card, Carly McNall and Niamh Early served up a frenetic flyweight final, McNall getting the nod there. At 57 kilos, Monkstown's Michaela Walsh, she shone as usual, showed her credentials again, beat Deirdre Duffy again in the final for the fifth time. A really good operator and a proper international hope for us. We mentioned nice showcase for Kelly Harrington in the prime portion of the televised card. The reason Kelly had the Swedish opposition was because last year's beaten opponent, Amy Broadhurst, has of course relocated to 64 kilos. Says herself maybe not quite her best performance, but more than enough to win her maiden senior championship. The best female fight of the night, unsurprisingly, came at welterweight. This one had star quality written all over it. Reigning champion Gráinne Walsh against former middleweight star Christina Desmond. Walsh won Boxer of the Night last year, so it was going to take that calibre of performance from Desmond to beat her, and she did just that. At Desmond's old 75-kilo weight, Aoife O'Rourke of Castlereagh navigated her way through Athlone's Cheyenne O'Neill in pretty forthright fashion. And lastly, at 80 kilos, Leona Hulun reclaimed her title from 2017 with a win over Lisa Brown. Some good fights there, Andy. None more so than Walsh against Desmond. It was a really good fight.
Yeah, it was a good fight. It was a highly skilled fight and contested, but Desmond just had the size, the reach, and probably the power that separated them, you know. In terms of skill, there was nothing between them.
No.
Good fight, though. Michaela Walsh, as I said on Saturday, she made me consider moving down to 64 kilos. Again, she'll be fighting Broadhurst, so she's not kind of out of the pan and into the fire, but she can. I think she could definitely compete with Broadhurst, and she wouldn't be lacking in size. Mm. She probably might have a slight advantage, if anything. So, but a good contest, and Desmond, you know, she'll be another one who'll be knocking on the door come the Olympics. So, there's a little bit of depth coming now, and as Kelly Harrington said, the younger ones who are coming through, you know, I met several young girls, and like you said, oh, how are you? Are you any good? No, I said, are you boxing? Yeah, I'm a European champion. Yeah. Like, oh yeah, sorry, you know, but like these
knock on girls from Katie Taylor,
they'll be coming, you know, like these girls are becoming household names. They'll be becoming household names in the future.
Mm. No, I agree with your point on Gráinne as well. It was Christina was just that bit longer than her. It took a while to work it out, and by the time she did in the third round, it was just too late.
Yeah, it was just too late. Yeah, it was a great contest though, you know. And they seemed to be great friends, so they
were
kind of consoling each other. Yeah. One was congratulating, one was consoling, was more concerned with the other fighter than themselves, you know. And which was lovely to see as well.
Mm. And Amy Broadhurst, Phil, who made her name in the for all the wrong reasons, the World Championships robbed that tournament.
Absolutely robbed. Like, I know it's always you hear like the term robbed, but that was a robbery. But I watched the fight beforehand, and then an Indian fighter got a dodgy decision, and I remember thinking like Amy Broadhurst is going to have to produce something pretty special to get a decision, and then they docked her a point. So that would be interesting. I know there's a nice little rivalry between Gráinne Walsh and Amy Broadhurst.
The only thing about the 64 kilogram division is that you're not in the Olympic, you're not in the Olympic weights. Yeah. So it's kind of a tough situation to be. You might drop down, but this is fine for maybe the World Championships and European Championships. Become Olympic qualifiers. You want to be in those divisions. You know, you want to be at least try, I guess, because. Mm. Is it better to have a chance of going to the Olympics or to be a champion at a weight that's not in the Olympics? It's a tough call, isn't it, for these...
Ironically, Kelly or Amy's in the same position that Kelly was in with Katie, so it's funny how things turn around, but like 17 titles for Amy Broadhurst in total. That was her first senior one, but time is very much on her side. She's only 21.
How far away is she from challenging Kelly?
Like that fight last year in the finals wasn't particularly close. I didn't think. I thought Kelly won it pretty clearly, but again, like Amy's really quite young. Kelly just kind of just too experienced, I thought, on the night. Just maneuvered her around the ring, and before Amy knew, the fight was over. She said it herself. She can't remember walking to the ring into the first 30 seconds of the fight. It's just a total blur for her. So she's obviously learned from that. And even though Saturday wasn't necessarily her best performance either, again, time is on her side. I think she probably will get there. But again, she made the same point that I was making about Kelly and Katie, that regardless of whether Kelly Harrington's still there for the Paris Olympics in 2024, Amy Broadhurst says she's coming down to meet her, so that they will renew acquaintances if they're both still there. I'd say the likelihood is Kelly would probably turn pro, would she? Try and get a bit of dash.
Yeah, maybe, maybe. I don't see. The thing is, she's getting good money now in the funding. And if she can, you know, she might want, she's 29. Like, with Katie Taylor now, people think that's not like it, but I think Katie is kind of an outlier. She's kind of like she's kind of a standalone fighter, and
yeah,
it's not as easy as it looks, you know what I mean? So we'll see. We'll see, yeah.
And as I said, 17 champions in all the other night, 10 first timers. Any other women on the card stand out for you, Andy?
No, McNall was a good winner, you know. That was a close fight as well, and it was just her extra fitness that kind of did. But again, it was like Broadhurst, those like Desmond Walsh, Broadhurst, Michaela Walsh as well, and they're kind of our international standard boxers. Like, and it's for the other ones now to kind of reach that standard, I think.
It feels like Michaela Walsh is really peaking now, doesn't it?
Yeah, and she's been there and thereabouts. So it's, obviously she'll be gearing up for the Olympics and trying to qualify first of all, and then win a medal.
Mm. Well, we'll switch to the pro scene now. And as events were unfolding on the South Circular Road, there was a big score being settled at London's O2 Arena. In the end, it was Chris Eubank Jr. who would have the last laugh.
The second time in his career that DeGale has been ruled down. The first time was against Badu Jack in the 12th round of their savage affair. Half a minute left in the 10th. Jab by DeGale, follows up with a left hand, but too close. Oh, and that left rattled DeGale, buckled his knee momentarily. And now Eubank going to the body. DeGale trying to hold on. 15 seconds left in the round. Eubank stalking DeGale. Right hand lands DeGale, desperately trying to hold on. His glove touches the canvas. He's down for the second time in the fight.
Ladies and gentlemen, after 12 rounds of action, the judges are in agreement. We have a unanimous decision, all three in favor of the winner. He is now the IBO super middleweight champion, Chris Eubank Jr.
Mauro Ranallo on the call there, and Jimmy Lennon Jr. with the verdict, as Chris Eubank Jr. dropped and dominated James DeGale in the pair's super middleweight meeting on Saturday night. Phil, that was a fight I sort of built up as a 50-50 in my mind going in, a nice clash of styles, but even though DeGale had the better of the first round, it was fairly clear he wasn't himself.
No.
It was going to be one-sided.
I know you lads talked about it last week in the build-up, the shoulder injury, and he got outworked. Like it could have been, I think one judge gave it by, was it 117-109? You know, that was probably fair enough. You know, he got a point taken off from Eubank, but it was really scrappy. It wasn't a good fight. Obviously for Eubank Jr., it's the biggest and most significant win. He definitely looked a lot better. Well, what he did very cleverly was, the last 30 seconds of every round, he went on the attack and basically just pushed DeGale back on the ropes and landed a few punches. And you'd come away from every round thinking, yeah, that's another Eubank Jr. round. Mm. That's always been the criticism with him, is he doesn't throw enough for, in fights, he doesn't tend to step on it till it's nearly too late. Now, that was the feeling with the Billy Joe fight where...
And maybe the George Groves fight too.
Yeah, like if there was a few... Like, obviously, Groves had popped the shoulder at that stage, but you'd be thinking, if it was the old school days of 15 rounds, there are two fights you could have won. But like that, a fight is over 12 rounds, and that's always been the frustration with him. Like, there's obviously a talented boxer there.
There's an athlete there.
Yeah.
I don't know about boxer. Like.
But he definitely boxed a lot better. His right hand looked a lot tighter. Mm. He was a bit more efficient. Saying that, like, there was a few times when he obviously stunned DeGale, and then... You know, he gets excited, he comes in, he rushes in.
I'd make the argument, like, he should have stopped DeGale. He should have stopped DeGale.
The ref actually could have stopped
DeGale. DeGale's probably a shell of himself. Probably is a shell of what he used to be. And to go the distance, to me, it's I don't know, If he would have stopped him, then he would have made a statement. Going the distance is not making a statement.
But I think at times he's still too cautious. Like, he was only really putting the foot on the gas in the last 30 seconds. Yeah.
That's a tactic where you kind of steal around. Hmm. If it's anywhere close, you go on it. And also, your opponent is physically more tired in the last 30 seconds of, you know, he's had the two and a half minutes, so you can step on the gas a little bit. It's a cheap tactic, isn't it, really? In a sense, it's a smart tactic.
Yeah, well, it won him most rounds.
But, like, I would say he should be stopping the girl. He should have. But that would have been a statement to me. This is not a statement. This is just like, so what? You know, you beat a great fighter who used to be great. You beat the great fighter in his prime. You know, so even though he's got the win over the Gael, to me, there's an asterisk beside it.
Mm. Yeah, like, there were certain elements to his performance that it's going to take a while before he builds up a rapport with his new trainer, but there were certain things that he was clearly told to work on. He was throwing his punches a lot straighter. He wasn't throwing these ridiculous 13-14 punch combinations. No. He was kind of being more strategic, which in the long run could benefit him, but the point I made last week that he's a middleweight, like, he's not a super middleweight, and it was borne out last year against Groves that in a what could have been a close fight was just negated by the fact that Groves is just way too big and just bossed him around the ring, and De Gael, being such a shadow of his former self, wasn't even able to do that. Eubank was just bowling through him, and the point deduction that Eubank got was one worth taking because it proved the physical difference. He literally picked De Gael up and flung him to the ground
It was like a
spinebuster style.
Spinebuster, yeah, that's what it was. You were expecting him to come in with a people's elbow or something. But yeah, like, no, he definitely looked better, and it was just interesting to hear the interaction with his trainer. Obviously, you don't get the interaction in every round because they're flicking between corners at the end of each round. But yeah, he was loading up too much, and he was told, look, if you're loading up, you gotta like go to the body because you're not connecting with the headshots. So it's whether that they can get through to him.
Mm.
And obviously his dad was there but was less vocal than he's been in the past.
Mm.
And like, that's always going to be like, that's like, his dad is always going to be an issue, as in people are always going to look at him differently because
it's going to be a distraction. It's going to be like a something that, you know, it's going to be like a sideshow to the fighter himself. But that's something he has to accept because he's used his dad. He's rode his dad's name. He was just, you know, John Smith. No one would care about him too much. You know what I mean? Because he's Chris Eubank Jr. And that's why people were interested
that
in
that. That comes with pressure. Like,
yeah.
I just think of times he fights just too cautiously, and the fact that he was able to put it on in the last 30 seconds showed me that he could do that throughout the round if he wanted, and he could have got a stoppage. Mm. But maybe this win kind of takes a bit of pressure off him. And
where does he go? Where do you see him going from there?
He's not going to. I don't think he'll stop till he gets a world title, and he might end up at
2-time IBO title winner. That IBO title is a huge deal. I take it.
He's 29, so he's got time on his side. Like, you know that when he's in a fight, you're never going to really stop him. So, you know, there's going to be some night that he's going to win a world title.
I'd like to see him fight Saunders at super middle.
Yeah, I just think if they fight 10 times, it's always going to be 10 wins for Saunders. The style's just all wrong, I think. Yeah. Maybe at super middle might be a new wrinkle that would change it up a little bit, but I just can't see it now. But in terms of the senior thing is interesting because I did feel there was a line of demarcation this time that senior was rolled out for the final press conference, but he wasn't in training camp.
Yeah.
And he didn't feature in any of the previous press conferences. If you use him as a promotional tool, absolutely fine. It's brilliant. The ring walk, it's great. But in terms of the actual boxing side of things, having your own coach and working on things in the gym is a lot more important than going around Brighton banging the drum. Like, you need to. At 29... he's no spring chicken.
The dad has a lot of experience, though, and a lot of things he says really does. If you kind of like, I don't know, look at it on a meta level, you know,
he makes
a lot of sense.
Yeah.
You know, he in a roundabout way, and I think he kind of
very roundabout.
He overcomplicates it, trying to sound like sophisticated or whatever it is. But when you pick out the bones of what he says, he makes a lot of sense. So I wouldn't dismiss him straight away. I'd always rely on his experience.
The last 30-second thing that you said, that was the thing he was notorious for doing it. He would round out the round.
He would walk around the ring, you know, doing the Eubank touch and showboat. And in the last 30 seconds, he just piled out. And it's, like I said, it's a good tactic.
Mm. And Eubank has signed up not to do TV reviews every week, but he signed up with ITV, and they have obviously the link up with PBC. We have Darrell beat Yildirim the other day, so Darrell is signed up to that, and then Caleb Plant as well. So they're two ins for Eubank to win a super middleweight title.
Yeah.
Not the most glamorous fights, but you know, winnable.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he won't stop till he actually gets.
He says that he wants to stay busy, fight again within the next 2 or 3 months, which is a good sign too. Him and Darrell would be a great fight because Darrell Anthony, not Andre, he's called the dog, and he is a fighter. You know, he will stand and fight, and that they're both big punch. Well, Darrell's a big puncher. They will punch hard at each other. But you do, some of the quotes from Darrell over the week was saying like he's already considering retirement, so that might be.
Is that an issue as well? Like when you think of the going into the fight as well, like the fact that the Gael was talking about retirement. Like, I mean, what was his head like going into that fight?
Mm. We might actually get to that now. He said himself he's likely to retire after that loss. Probably worth reflecting on the Gael in broader terms. Before we do that, I thought we'd remind people of this clip captured by Coogan Cassius a couple of years ago after the Gael won his world title against Andre Darrell.
James, you had some very poignant initials on your shorts tonight. DS, Darren Sutherland, your old friend and rival for the amateur days, who obviously we sorely miss, all of us. And you've got a message.
Oh, of course, yeah. I've got a bit carried away just there. I dedicated to Jim. Obviously, that is for Jim. But it's for Darren Sutherland as well, of course. My late rival. He obviously, when he took his life back in 2009 was horrendous, and from when he passed, I've always had DS on my shorts, and this world title is for him as well. Please believe me.
Great guy, wasn't he? And a great fighter.
Great fighter, unbelievable fighter. We've had some great scraps, and man, it's for him. Look, for the past 6 years or whatever, 5 years, it's for him. Trust me.
James De Gale there after beating Andre Darrell for the IBF title, paying tribute to Darren Sutherland, whose initials he sported on his shorts right through his career. It was through Darren, Phil, that we kind of first got wind of James De Gale. What are your thoughts on his career, broadly speaking?
Yeah, like obviously winning a gold medal, and you know, then you had that rivalry with George Groves, and that was such a tight fight, and you kind of wondered. Like, Groves did what Groves does. He gets under fighter skins. That was around the time Sky had their ringside show and they were in studio, and like he just wound De Gale up so much. And you just kind of felt like De Gale wanted the win more than Groves, and he came up short. It was so close. But he went off then, and, you know, he fought on the road. He did it the hard way. And he was the first British gold medalist to win a world title.
Yeah, like to say he'd underachieved, I probably would be in that camp that he probably slightly underachieved, but as Phil said, he made history, did it before Anthony Joshua just won the gold medal and then got his world title.
Yeah, and he earned it. Like you said, on the road, he was signed with McKenzie, and he was fighting in places like, you know, Blue Water Shopping Centre in Darford, you know, like on Channel 5 and against opponents you never know, but stuck at it. Stuck at it, you know, got his break, Simon Al Heyman, got those big fights and proved his worth, you know, won the world title. I don't know if you can really say underachieved when you won a world title. You know what I mean? It's hard to say, isn't it? You know,
no, of course.
But I know what you mean. Talent that was there, sometimes it never really matched what you saw on the ring in terms of those fights, especially those smaller fights that he had had. Like, he would struggle a lot with a lot of those fights.
Felt like the injuries really plagued him a lot, and promotional hiccups as well. I think his best performance ever was on the Frotch Groves undercard against Brandon Gonzalez. He was exceptional that night. Virgil Hunter brought Gonzalez over, talked a big game, and the Gael cleaned him out in a few rounds. So it's just a bit of mismanagement after that. Signed with Al Heyman, which is all well and good, but it took him out of the public eye. He could have been billed as a pay-per-view fighter in Britain, and he chose to go to the US. Looking back, I think he might have taking a different route. You mentioned Groves there, and they are inextricably linked. I put up a tweet there earlier that who had the better career when it's all said and done, and on Andy's point, given what he's won, I would have thought it was pretty close. The fact that Groves beat De Gale maybe sways things, but Groves are unanimous on that poll. A lot of people
But that's probably because we saw Groves in. De Gale used to fight in America, and okay, we might see the fights, but he wouldn't have been in the public eye as much as, say, George Groves. And obviously, Groves would have gained a lot of respect for the Frotch fights, particularly the first one. So it's, yeah, like, that's a tough enough one to pick, like, who had the better career.
Mm. Yeah, I would say it's a bit of a toss-up, but a lot of people, well, who follow me, I don't know how intelligent those people are, but they seem to think Groves
was, yeah.
Question them already if they're following Ronan.
So we'll probably have another chat about De Gale when he does actually hang up the gloves, but there's news breaking all the time, as you can see in the boxing world, since we were last on. Friend of the show, Anthony Crolla, taking on the steepest test of all. He's fighting Lomachenko for the world title. And there's been a weird reaction to this, because you'd swear Lomachenko was fighting Joe Bloggs off the street. Yeah. Crolla's a former world champion. He's a mandatory challenger. There might be a differential in terms of class, but he's earned a shot. Like, he'd be stupid if he didn't take it.
Yeah, and he obviously responded to some of that criticism he's seen on social media, and he said, you know, I'm a former world champion, I'm a mandatory challenger, I think I'm going to take this shot regardless of what Dave on Twitter or somebody referred to thinks, like, that I've no chance. But, you know, why wouldn't he take it on? Like, he's going to share the ring with the best pound-for-pound boxer in the game at the moment, and okay, he's not going to win, but, you know, he could put in a respectable performance.
It must annoy boxers, Andy, does it, when it is, I think he said Barry from Barnsley is tweeting me here saying I have no chance, but, like, you know, boxers are in it, that's what they're in it for, to fight the best in the biggest platforms.
It is, yeah, that's like, and if you were to turn it down, you'd question, why would you even go back into a gym, why would you even put on a pair of gloves if you don't want to get in there with the best? You shouldn't be doing it. Yeah. That's what it is, and to be the best, you have to be in there with the best and try and beat the best. So he's going to go in there in earnest and try and do that, but where he can, it's not for us to decide. It's not for Barry and Barnsley to decide either. But like, you have to respect him and give him. You don't. You can't see him winning the fight. It is hard to see him winning the fight. Yeah. But he can't ever believe that or admit that to himself. He's going to have to go in there with all intentions of winning the fight.
Yeah, like, and boxing is, like, obviously, you know, he's won a world title. That's the pinnacle, but also, like, when he retires, like, to be able to sit down with people and say, I shared the ring with Lomachenko, and to, like, be able to talk back and say, you know, he was unbelievable, this is what he, like, do you know, I was only listening to a show this week about, it was Mark and the Bruno and Tyson, 1989, and, like, Bruno had no chance in that fight. Now, he lasted five rounds, but it was still
talking about it.
Yeah, exactly. And it was still a brilliant occasion. Like, not every fight is going to be 50-50. Like, Lomachenko is the best, so not many people are going to beat him. So, you know, he still has to have fights.
It's interesting to see the attitude towards different boxers, because Crolla, is there so much good intention towards Crolla. But compare that to Amir Khan, who's going up against Crawford. Khan's got no chance. Why didn't he stay in Britain and fight Cal Brook? You know,
Khan has a much better chance of beating Crawford than Crolla does of beating Lomachenko.
You know, in some ways, like, oh, Crolla, go have this fight. It's a great send off for you. You're going to get a good payday. You're going to test it against the, like, it's a different attitude. Whereas, like, Khan is like, you know, that was just an interesting point for me. That I guess it kind of, it's your reputation, isn't it? It kind of precedes you as it goes.
Like, think back recent, right? Rocky Fielding against Canelo. Everyone, again, was like, ah, it's a great fight for you, Rocky.
Yeah.
You know.
Two rounds, three rounds, was it?
I think it was three in the end, wasn't it?
Yeah, wasn't great, was it?
Several knockdowns.
But he didn't take much punishment, really.
No.
He didn't get concussed. And he got well paid for it, well compensated. Yeah. And that's what's going to happen with... Well, the only thing about the Crolla-Lomachenko fight is that Lomachenko doesn't really seem to knock people out. And he seems to draw fights out. And Crolla has a really tough defence. You know, he's a tough guy. He has tough defence. You can see it being a one-sided 12-round fight where he does take a lot of shots.
He kind of just beats it into submission, though. It's not what he does. Like, he doesn't...
He drains you mentally, because whatever you try, he has the answer for, and you just kind of just
you're just disillusioned by the end of it. You know, you just kind of, you just.
There is fights where we've seen his opponents just sitting in the, on the stool in the corner, and they're just like, right, I'm done here.
The greatest, like one of the greatest of the generation, Rigondo, was like, get me out of here. Yeah. You know, wasn't it? He just checked out.
And the mats don't work in boxing, obviously. We've seen that over centuries, but like, Crawley couldn't work out Linares, and Lomachenko managed to put Linares away. So just even on that logic alone, kind of shows maybe a slight gulf, but we'll see what happens. One last point, I think the clock's against us, but Billy Joe Saunders, who moved up to 168, seeking the WBO title, seems to be a little spanner in the works there, where Gilberto Ramirez says, I haven't vacated that title yet, so don't know what's going to happen there. Saunders has given up his mandatory slot at 160. Golovkin's now mandatory for Demetrius Andrade, so that fight could happen, with Golovkin said to have signed with the Zone. So first half of the year looks pretty set. I think these fights are starting to fall into place, and it's looking like it's another strong year.
Yeah, and it looks like it's Triple G against Andrade, and then obviously Jacobs and Canelo.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd imagine if Canelo and Triple G win, then that sets up part three.
Hopefully two semi-finals would be the middleweight divisions.
Let her pause that. He's Golovkin's going to sign with the Zone, so
yeah.
When you have to, you'd have, if Billy Joe Saunders is not in the mix, you have, those are the four best middleweights in the world fighting for the belts.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll have a semi-final and a final.
Yeah, I'm just like, who's the, like, Triple G, I haven't been that impressed with Andrade. Like, he's obviously.
But you just think of this, I know what you're saying, but this kind of crossroads in their fight, time off, two defeats for Golovkin, probably a bit angry, disillusioned a little bit. If he goes with the Zone, I wonder, does he stay with his manager? Is it a new setup? Because some of the rumours were that he would have dates from the Zone for his own promotion company, so that kind of gives me the signal that he's going to strike it out alone now and leave K2. So there'll be all those things coming, and I know Andrade hasn't really impressed too much of late, but now he's coming up, you know, and he is talented, he's slightly younger, maybe a little bit fresher, not as sharp one, and could make for a good fight.
Yeah, the other one, I can't wait for the other one. Jacobs and Canelo.
It's kind of going under the radar. It's a sleeper, isn't
it? I think they're
kicking
off the media tour this week, so you're going to see it ratchet up now. And Sky have it on free-to-air television, which is great for
everyone. They need to create some spice there. Like, you know, it needs to be some sort of something there. They need to, like, manufacture something, a bit of a soap opera.
Show or share or something.
I don't know. Canelo to fail a test again or something. Yeah. You know.
It's mad that Danny Jacobs' story isn't bigger, because it's just one of the most remarkable things that he's managed to come back and become such a force, given what he's been through. But I think that's pretty much our laugh for this week, lads. Thanks, Andy. Thanks, Phil.
Good
thanks
to
the producer, Tom, as well. Thanks for tuning in. We'll chat to you next week.